The WBFO Brief Podcast is made possible by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. Access to the newest treatments and most sophisticated testing is so important. It matters where you receive your cancer care. Spend one day with Roswell Park. Visit roswellpark.org.
Today's WBFO Brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz is proposing new initiatives, including a new workforce development program and opening a public defender's office. The proposals were outlined in a State of the County address delivered Wednesday night at the Buffalo AKG Art Museum. In announcing Erie Corps, Poloncarz compared the plan to the Civilian Conservation Corps of Franklin D. Roosevelt's administration. The plan for a public defender's office, though, is being opposed by the Legal Aid Bureau of Buffalo, which says it's been providing the same services locally since 1877. In a statement, the Bureau says a public defender's office would, quote, only serve to harm clients and cost the county more money. The State of County of Addresses delivered last night by Poloncarz and Chautauqua County Executive P.J. Wendell can be found at WBFO.org. A lawsuit accuses a local celebrity art restaurateur of sexual assault and harassment. Filed Wednesday in state Supreme Court, the suit claims Russell Salvatore of sexual harassment. The plaintiff asserts that when she protested the treatment, she was wrongfully terminated from Russell's Steaks, Chops, and More. Salvatore responded with a statement denying the charges and dismissing the suit as, quote, an attempt to extort me for $1.5 million. And the approaching commencement season in Western New York will feature a first, an artificial intelligence robot delivering a commencement address. Duville University says the robot named Sophia will deliver the address on May 11th during ceremonies at Leecom Harbor Center. State Comptroller is reviewing data that may indicate a slowing economy in New York State. According to Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, first quarter local sales tax collections totaled $5.6 billion, an increase of 1.6% over the last year. However, DiNapoli says that represents the lowest rate of growth since the first quarter of 2021 at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. While New York City saw 3.2% growth in the first quarter, the remaining counties experienced a slight decrease in sales tax collections. Erie County saw a decline of 6.4%. Allegheny County enjoyed a boost of 7.3%. Police say they've arrested two people and recovered a semi-automatic handgun in connection with shots that were fired in Buffalo's Parkside neighborhood. Charged with criminal possession of a weapon in the fourth degree are 19-year-old Javen Romero of Buffalo and 23-year-old Lloyd Graves of the Bronx. Police responded to reports of shots fired Saturday on Agassiz Circle. The two suspects, police say, were located in a Delaware Park parking lot inside a vehicle with bullet holes. Shell casings and a weapon were found in and around the vehicle. And the Erie County Board of Elections say another 1,198 ballots were cast yesterday in the special election in the 26th Congressional District. Over a five-day period, that brings the total of 5,907. All 38 early voting sites in Erie County will be open again today from noon until 9. Early voting ends on Sunday.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying grifts find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
Well, the fate of a future arts facility for Musical Fair Theater could be in jeopardy after 4,600 Amherst residents signed a petition to put the theater's contract with Amherst up for a vote in a referendum. Community member Chris Dragowski and other residents plan to use that referendum to vote down the town's plan to build a multi-million-dollar facility for Musical Fair Theater. He says the vote is an effort to slow down the town's spending.
The permissive referendum is not to spend $11 million for a theater building. This is not against Musical Fair. It's just that the residents strongly feel that building a theater is a non-essential service, which we cannot afford at this time. If Musical Fair wants to pay for this building and the maintenance and the upkeep and pay the town properly, taxes, I don't think we'd be here today.
But Musical Fair Artistic and Executive Director Randall Kramer says many of the group's employees and customers are local, meaning the financial benefits would offset the costs.
Our economic impact annually is $2.8 million. And that means employing people locally. That means that money we are paying people is going right back into the economy. When we move to the new space, that will have 220 seats and a slightly enlarged cabaret. That's going to be $4 million a year in the new theater. When you do the math for that impact over the 30-year lease that we have signed with the town of Amherst, that is a $120 million economic impact.
Kramer says the proposed space would be available for other uses when not needed for Musical Fair. As a disclosure, Musical Fair underwrites WBFO programming. The recently approved state budget did not include what environmentalists say is a key anti-climate change provision. WBFO Albany correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
The measure would rescind what's known as the 100-foot rule that requires that utility ratepayers subsidize gas hookup installations within 100 feet of a home or business. It also would cap utility bills for low-income New Yorkers and make it easier for gas companies to help customers convert to energy-saving devices like heat pumps. Lisa Marshall of New Yorkers for Clean Power says the measure is key to meeting the state's Climate Protection Act goal of net zero emissions by 2050. But she says the New York State Assembly leadership prevented it from becoming part of the budget.
The Assembly is where climate bills go to die.
Liz Moran with Earth Justice agrees.
The Assembly ultimately didn't come to the table in good faith on this. And there's a disturbing trend we're seeing with the Assembly.
Moran says while the Assembly backed the initial Climate Protection Act in 2019, it has not approved bills that would help fulfill those goals. New York Heat is backed by Governor Kathy Hochul. It was approved several times in the state Senate. The bill has 76 sponsors in the Assembly, a majority of its 150 members. Marshall blames political donations by one utility company for the failure of the bill to win passage. National Fuel Gas Company, based in western New York, also extracts natural gas in Pennsylvania through hydrofracking. Fracking is banned in New York, but fracked gas can be legally sold here. Other major New York-based utilities who sell both gas and electrically generated power support New York Heat.
We can't exactly say that correlation equals causation, but we can draw some inferences from that.
Moran says it's hard to prove that there's a relationship, but she says National Fuel Gas Company's opposition seems to be a factor.
This is a scenario like many where it's hard to squarely blame it on one thing. However, there's documented evidence that National Fuel has been a outspoken opponent to this legislation.
The group say they are not giving up on the measure and they'll push for it to be approved before the session ends in June. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, speaking Wednesday afternoon, says he has not ruled out passage of the measure in his House before the 2024 session ends.
There was an agreement between the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly that we'll keep talking and hopefully we can come to an agreement by the end of the session.
Moran says last year, June was marked by distinct signs of climate change, including record heat waves and smoke from Canadian wildfires. And she says that could happen again this year, right when Assembly members are deciding whether to vote on the measure or not. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
For the first time last week, we had a chance to visit the Tool Library.
Sure.
Now located in Buffalo's University District at 2626 Main Street, the nonprofit has been around for over a decade, serving up not just tools, but solutions for local residents. The executive director is Darren Cotton, who's been there from the beginning.
So I was a student at UB, living off campus, having a terrible landlord. I think a lot of people can probably relate to that. Trying to do small odd jobs around the house, but just not really having the tools to do it. And so I was studying urban planning at the time, and so the idea of a tool library was really intriguing to me, not only, you know, for myself as a renter, but like studying community development and thinking about how do neighborhoods, you know, advocate for themselves and kind of tackle issues, quality of life projects, that sort of thing. So Tool Library was a really exciting idea to me. So we got some startup funding from the city, found a small storefront a little bit further down Main Street, and embarked on this grand adventure.
Did you have like a template to follow when you did this, or is this something you kind of grow out of your own imagination and the sense of need here in the city?
So tool libraries have been around for probably 6 or 7 decades. So there's kind of an argument about who started the first tool library.
We know it wasn't you.
Right, exactly. But there were other tool libraries out there. And so I stumbled upon a national Google group of just like people who were working in tool libraries, volunteering in tool libraries. And so there was a lot of really great material that was already out there, membership templates, waivers, that sort of thing. So I absolutely wasn't starting from scratch. And I think that just kind of speaks to the movement that everyone just wants to share whatever resources are available, because it's a great idea and it should be in every community. And so however we can support other people trying to start them.
Okay.
So yeah, we started with a few dozen tools, probably had 30 or 40 members our first year, and today we're just over 1,500 active members. We've got about 4,800 items in the inventory. And inventory has really evolved over the years, just based on both community need and then just, you know, really interesting donations we've got. So we got
let's take a look.
Sewing machine recently donated. So again, like, people hear tools and, you know, this is kind of what comes to mind. But
right.
You know, we've got pop-up canopies, tables, chairs. So for, you know, a block club doing a block party, again, you know, these things are hundreds of dollars to go out and buy. But if you're just trying to put an event on for one day, it makes sense to come borrow what you need, use it, bring it back, and someone else can do the same thing. Projectors, projector screens. We've got a lot of kind of kitchen things. So pressure canners, dehydrators. Popcorn machine. Yes.
All right. So you said a sewing machine. You have a sewing machine.
Yep.
Has anybody taken you up on that yet?
I think one person has taken it out. Right. And it was really interesting. It's probably from the 1980s, but one of our volunteers in the shop also volunteers with our Dare to Repair cafe initiative. So they are specifically focused on fixing sewing machines. So they took it home, kind of gave it a once over, got it back into, you know, really great working condition. And so again, we're just really lucky that we have like such an amazing community of people who have these skills, who are willing to share them, and who are going to keep something, you know, that's 40 years old, hopefully working for another 10, 20 years.
And of course, you guys right here, you're in the university district, but right on the edge of the Parkside district, right? Who is getting involved here? Is it everybody from all over the city, or is it more local people? What is it?
Yeah, so our volunteers come from all over the place. We benefit a lot from proximity to UB, so we still get a lot of students. I've stayed really engaged and connected to UB, and so they've been fantastic partners. We actually started a first-of-its-kind work-study partnership last year, where the Office of Student Engagement basically places students in the tool library. We train them as volunteers. They get to meet community members, but they also get paid directly through the university. So it's kind of a win-win situation for that. And then our members are coming from all over Western New York. So we've got 80 different zip codes represented by members. So, you know, we've got people coming from Niagara Falls, Lewiston, Derby, Springville, Colden, Akron. So it's really all over the place. And that's really exciting. You know, when we started, it was really just City of Buffalo. And especially over the pandemic, we got calls from people in like Cattaraugus, Orleans County being like, hey, can I come borrow tools? And it's like, well, we are here to remove barriers. So absolutely. If you can make it here, 100%, you can sign up as a member.
So in terms of the word getting out there, and now that you've talked to a lot of these people that are from these 80 different zip codes, what's been the connection? How are people getting word of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think because we have the first 10 years, we were totally volunteer run. So limited capacity to do, you know, concerted marketing efforts. It really was just word of mouth, a neighbor borrowing a rototiller and their neighbor being like, oh, cool, can I borrow that? And it's like, well, if you sign up as a member to the tool library, you can access this and 4,800 other items. So it really just has been like that person to person. This is a great resource. It's available. You know, sign up as a member, support the organization, but then also get access to things that you need.
More time is needed to run through the many aspects of the tool library. In fact, we'll be hearing more on an upcoming episode of What's Next, including Darren Cotton's vision of how tool sharing could help neighborhoods. Think of how a
shared snowblower, for example, could work to keep city sidewalks clear throughout Buffalo winters. The tool library currently rents out its space, a one-time bank. In fact, the massive steel vault remains in place to this day. It's been home to a number of enterprises, including Chicks and Flicks, a store that rented videos and served up chicken. The tool library holds Dare to Repair cafes around the region to help residents fix a number of items, such as small appliances, lamps, and clothing. Among their surprisingly inventive inventory, they have a 3D printer that has produced some near miraculous solutions. Listening to Darren Cotton speak, the tool library possesses endless possibilities, provided it has the resources.
But really opening this space up and making it more of a workshop makerspace, having these things on site that people can use. We get a lot of members who want to make two or three cuts of a piece of wood, and it's like, why am I dragging this, you know, table saw home? So having a space like that where people can come and work on their projects, very much inspired by the foundry, the incredible resources they have over there. But again, that every neighborhood should have access to a makerspace and a workshop. So that's the vision of, like, why do we want to own the building? Like, what can we do with this space? Right now we're renters trying to make the space that as it exists work for us. And the vision is how do we transform the space so that it works for us?
So you have a capital campaign coming up.
Yes.
What are you looking to raise?
So we will be purchasing the building for $500,000. So that's the goal. To date, we've raised $100,000. We are finalists for a number of large local grants that we're super excited and grateful for. So if those come through, we will be much closer to our goal. But ideally, by the end of July, we need to raise that $500,000 to buy the building. And then once we are owners, we will set out on our phase two, which is raising another $500,000 to renovate the space.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.